Can we be in order? The time is 10 o'clock now. Without wasting time, let me first welcome the Honorable Minister, Umamuli Ndiwezu, and as well the DG, if the DG is amongst us, and the officials of the department, honorable members of the committee, officials of the NCOP, you are all welcome. I am sure that we all have the agenda for today's meeting, which has only four items. If you count out the openings by the chair, we are dealing first with the overview and executive undertaking by the Department of Social Development. We are dealing with the first item that we'll be dealing with, and we have only six undertakings from the department, which I hope they have received all those questions, undertakings that they are supposed to respond to. I see that honorable members of the committee, majority of them, they are already in. We are therefore not to waste any time except to say, Honorable Minister, you are very much welcome. For the purpose of not taking for granted that you know each other, I'm Zukiswa Ngcitha, the chairperson of the committee. I am with my colleagues. Whenever they speak, they will make sure that they introduce themselves so that in a meeting we know each other very well. Honorable Minister, our schedule is very tight today. We are not going to waste any time. We'll go straight to you to take us through the undertakings. And when you are done, we'll then interact with the information that we have received from you. Over to you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngcitha. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's good to see you again on this new platform. Also, I wouldn't want to waste time. I'm Minister Lindiwe Zulu, a Minister of Social Development. I do have my team from the department, and I think that they will introduce themselves once I have made the opening remarks. But also just to indicate, Chair, that I'm doubling up this morning. I also have cabinet, but I felt important that I come through this side to make the opening remarks. And because I know that this is about the executive undertakings, obviously the department, even though I make the undertakings, the department and its entities are the ones that help me in the implementation of these undertakings. And so I will I'm hoping that the department and the entities will be able to answer some of the practical questions that will come out of our presentation this morning. And I will request that I be excused so that I can be able to go back to cabinet. But I felt it important that at least I just take this break and be here to make my opening remarks and then leave the department to continue with the explanation or responses. Secondly, Chairperson, if it so happens that amongst the questions that are being asked, there are also questions that might need my response maybe later on if I'm able to come back. If I'm not able to come back, I make an undertaking that I would then have to make those presentations in writing if there are questions that have not been answered that would be directly impacting on myself as the minister and the member of the executive, or even if there are others that might want the response from other government spheres like your MECs and so forth, because I do want to say, Chairperson, that we work on the basis that, yes, we are the national department, but a lot of our work also has to be implemented by provinces through our MECs at provincial level, and we do have our meetings with the MECs in what we call the MINMEC, and we regularly have those meetings. I do then, Chairperson, without a waste of time, I wish to thank you for giving us this opportunity today to present as a department, and also make the undertaking that as a department and myself as a minister, I fully believe in this process that we are having today, and we do everything we can to respond to our undertakings, but also to appreciate the role and importance of the Select Committee and the role and importance of the MPs who sit in here, because we believe that these are members who represent their constituencies, and as a department and minister, we take it that any question that they ask us particularly on the basis that they serve their constituencies, and they need to go back to their constituencies and also respond to the questions that are asked by their constituencies. So today I appear before the Select Committee on Petition and Executive Undertakings to provide an account of the performance of the Department of Social Development and its entities, the Social Security Agency, SASSA, and the National Development Agency, NDA, against the commitments that I made to the National Council of Provinces during the delivery of the Department's budget vote 22 July 2020. The budget vote to the NCOP expressed several specific undertakings, and for the purpose of this, of today's meeting, the committee asked me to specifically provide it with performance accounts on six of these. The approach I will be taking in providing this report is comprehensive in that it consists of three interlinked steps. Firstly, I'm going to specify each of the six commitments. Secondly, against each commitment, I'm going to present to the committee high-profile and specific progress outcomes or impact. And impact is very important for us, Chairperson, as a department, and myself in particular as a minister, because I believe that if we have our programs and our strat plans and everything, and if we don't deal with how our service delivery will have impact on the people, I have a problem with that. And we're doing our best to make sure that we focus on the impact. Lastly, I will invite the Acting Director General of the Department, as well as the Chief Executive Officers of entities, to present the details and future plans that are relevant to each of the commitments and progress outcomes. Firstly, on 22 July 2020, I gave an undertaking to the NCOP, and I quote, "We are strengthening the capabilities of our programs relative to the challenges that accompany the COVID-19 pandemic," close quote. And of course, we all are aware of the challenges that we have had to face with regard to the COVID-19, but I must indicate, Chairperson, that our immediate response and quick response has put us in a global stature in as far as the way we responded to COVID-19. So since then, we have reviewed our 2020-2021 annual performance plan, which we call the APPs, and aligned this to government's priority response to the coronavirus disease of 2019, COVID-19. Two, we strengthened our collaboration and coordination with other government departments and entities in, for instance, the disbursement of special COVID-19 Social Relief of Distress SRC grant to 5,970,167 beneficiaries. Three, improved partnership with civil society organizations, the private sector, and multilateral institutions towards, for example, cushioning South Africans against hunger, gender-based violence, which is, as the President has termed it, is the second pandemic. And I think that honorable members will be aware that we will be launching the 16 days of activism. And as a department, we are committed to not only the 16 days of activism, but we are committed to 365 days of fighting against gender-based violence and femicide. Four, we started the process of digitizing some aspects of our service delivery channels with a view to beneficiaries beneficially utilize the data that we have been that will be generated by this digital infrastructure towards improving the design, delivery, and experience of a wide range of social development services. Here, Honorable Chairperson, I do want to indicate that for me, it was quite exciting, and I think it's going to be exciting for everyone to realize that all the 9 million people that applied for the 350 social grant of relief, nobody went to SASSA offices. Everybody used technology to apply for that, and including the fact that even in people in the deepest rural areas were able to assist and help each other. And therefore, the lesson that has been learned from here is the fact that we can improve our service delivery by ensuring that we use technology today, and working with the Department Minister Stella Ndabeni Abrahams, I think, is some of the things that we need to take forward. In my second commitment, I reported that, and I quote, today we have received over 7.8 million applications for the special COVID-19 SRD grant. Of this number, we have approved 4 million applications, and to whom just over 1.7 billion rand will be dispersed, and unquote, because then members must appreciate that I'm just quoting what I said is not the department, and SASSA will indicate the latest development. Since then, 9.3 million applications towards COVID-19 SRD grant have been received from South Africa across the country. At the end of October 2020, nearly 6 million or 5.970167 of these applicants have been paid. This represents the disbursement of 11.517260750 of money that has been dispersed. You will recall that His Excellency President Cyril Ramaphosa has since announced government extension of this grant by a further 3 months. Third, among the undertakings that the committee asked me to provide an account of is when I said, I quote, SASSA has commenced with the payment of applications received in May to those who will still qualify for both June and July. Payments will be effected as far as possible in batches of 500,000 to qualifying applicants per day. This is to avoid a system overload. The need to pay the COVID-19 SRD grant has constructively challenged SASSA to explore the inherent technological possibilities of and, for the first time, deploy among other technological platforms the WhatsApp, USSD, web-based grant application, email application, and telephone-facilitated application. As a result, the widest population among the unemployed, poorest, and otherwise hard-to-access South Africans was reached. Beyond SASSA's traditional and limited technologies, the COVID-19 SRD grant nudged SASSA towards the future prospects of deploying grant services and products through growing technological possibilities. To this end, SASSA has managed to increase the number of applicants who receive COVID-19 SRD grants from 4.4372 in May 2020 to 5.970167 in October 2020. This is on the backdrop of no prior usage of these technological platforms in the SASSA environment. And I must say, Chairperson, that going forward, we really need to also assist in ensuring that we improve in assisting our people to appreciate and understand and use the technology. Fourth undertaking that I made before the NCOP is conveyed in my statement, and I quote, I've been inundated with concerns from members of the public and organization representing persons with disability, including some honorable members of this House, regarding the intake of disability grants. SASSA is currently exploring ways in which we can safely and progressively reintroduce these services, and will make an announcement in due course, unquote. And therefore, in view of some of the challenges that concern disability grants, the department and SASSA are invoking targeted administrative processes by which child support grant beneficiaries with disabilities will be transitioned from the child support grant to disability grant when they reach the age of 18. While this will reduce the number of grant beneficiaries who are ordinarily and unduly subjected to repetitive health assessments, the administrative assessment solution that is at the disposal of the department and SASSA will utilize the wealth of secure administrative tools to make disability grants accessible to those who deserve it. Fifth, among the undertakings that I expressed to the NCOP is that, and I quote, our long-term plan, starting in the current financial year, is to introduce the food voucher system and expand it beyond well-established retailers for communities to buy directly from the local food suppliers who are small, medium, and micro enterprises, community-owned or cooperatives, a close quote. In the immediate, the department has shifted its food and nutrition provision mechanism from its existing network to community nutrition development centers, which we normally call CNDCs, towards providing food passes and applying the knock-and-drop approaches. Largely, these approaches were adopted in compliance with the COVID-19 protective measures and protocols, for instance, avoiding unnecessary human contact that may increase the transmission and spread of COVID-19. Sixth and lastly, Chairperson, the committee asked me to provide it with the progress report that is relevant to the statement in which I said, and I quote, from this original budget allocation of 7 million, the National Development Agency, NDA, targets to benefit cooperatives and civil society organizations, CSOs, especially those involved in the production of COVID-19-related PPEs, unquote. To this end, I report to the committee that during a period when township and rural operating small businesses and cooperatives, civil society, were closing their doors owing to adverse economic conditions during the hard lockdown period, the NDA spent 5.7 million on procuring COVID-19-related PPEs from some of these negatively affected entities. Women, youth, and people with disabilities consist the majority of persons who directly benefited from this targeted procurement. Chairperson, I do want to indicate to you that this was one of the most difficult areas for us to get government to go and procure from your cooperatives, which are supported by government, procure from cooperatives. This is an ongoing struggle that we as the Department of Social Development will contribute to in terms of empowering your cooperatives and empowering your small businesses and ensuring that the money begins to circulate amongst your Black-owned entities, amongst people who are in the township. This is a commitment that we are prepared to really fight for, because if we don't do this and if we don't make the changes, many of our people will remain with no money in their hands, and yet they have the capacity and capability. We're talking about PPEs at the moment, Chairperson, but we want to extend that also to other areas of school uniforms and a whole range of things that we think can be done by our people and women in particular in the township. Chairperson and honorable members, this is the totality of my progress report to yourselves as specified and as indicated earlier. I will now call upon the Acting Director General, Mr. Mthunu, as well as the two CEOs of SASSA and NDA to provide you with further details and future implementation plans that are relevant to these undertakings. And lastly, Chairperson, I also would like to indicate that as a minister, also like most ministers, I've already signed my performance agreement with President Cyril Ramaphosa, and therefore part of what is being presented here and the future is contained in that performance agreement. And I think that that's what the select committee and other relevant committees will monitor in terms of the implementation and the performance of the executive. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. I appreciate the fact that you managed to come and address us. Usually, we know on Wednesday, it's very difficult for ministers to join us. But usually when you are not going to be in the meeting, at least the deputy should be delegated to come and answer to the questions. I do not know whether it is possible for the minister to allow the deputy in your absentia to join us. It's just a question.
Yes, Chairperson, I absolutely have no problem in that. Myself and the DM work together on the very same issues that have been indicated here, and it will be possible for the DM to respond where the DM needs to respond. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Then we can excuse you, Honourable Minister. Thank you very much. And go straight to the DG to end.
Honourable Chairperson and the members of the committee, a very good morning to you.
Good morning.
And thank you very much for the opportunity. Minister, thank you for the remarks made as well. I am sharing the presentation with the hope that it's visible.
Okay.
ADG, can you please introduce yourself and introduce your team, please?
Thank you very much, Minister.
Thanks. My name is Linton Mkun, and I'm the Acting Director General at Social Development. I'm accompanied by the CEO of SASSA, Ms. Toti Memela, who's also here with me in the room. I also have the CEO of the NDA, who's with us virtually, Ms. Tamo Mzobe, and the team from SASSA and the team from the NDA. I also have all the DDGs in the Department of Social Development who are with us. Kumbula Ndaba, who is responsible for corporate services. Sabani Shenge, who is responsible for strategy and organizational transformation. Brenda Sibeko, who is responsible for comprehensive social security. Peter Nechipale, who is responsible for community development. And Isabella Sekawana, who is responsible for welfare services. This is the team, and then of course I've got colleagues from my office, Bui and Olida as well, who are here with us. That's the delegation that we bring this morning to this meeting, of course led by the Minister and the Deputy Minister, who I anticipate will join shortly. I am now sharing the presentation, Chair. I'm not sure whether it's visible yet.
Not yet.
Okay. There we go. Thank you very much. Let me perhaps just indicate at this juncture, Honourable Chair, that there may be one or two slides that have additions. In the meantime, can I please ask the Secretary to also allow Tabani Sheng to share the presentation? My computer is...
You can continue while she's trying to share it.
Okay. There we go. I think that's... There we go. That should... Hello?
Yes, you've got it. The presentation is on. Can we continue? Mr. Nkunu, are you still with us? Mr. Nkunu? What happened?
We hear you, Chair, we don't hear him.
I thought it's me.
Yeah, I
finished.
Yeah. Chair, can you
sit
down? Ted,
I'm there with you,
Ted. Okay. Let me just indicate, Chair, that the presentation that you received, there are not many changes. There are one or two, particularly on numbers, because they change quite often. So there are one or two numbers that may have changed in terms of grant recipients in the main. So I just wanted to make that indication, and we've included some numbers in some aspects of the presentation. Okay, I think on the first slide, Chairperson, you will see that we provide a contextual analysis. And really, the idea behind providing the contextual analysis is to put this into context so that so that we have context to the presentation that we're making. This, of course, NCOP budget vote speech was delivered on the 22nd of July by the Minister of social development. And of course, those undertakings were made as the minister has outlined them. It's important here to highlight the members of the committee that the undertakings were made whilst the country was on a hard lockdown. And some of these undertakings were an immediate response by the Department of Social Development portfolio. And when we say portfolio, we include SASA and the NGA, because that's how we work as a department, we work as an entire portfolio. And they were meant to assist society, especially the most poorest and vulnerable, as they are the most affected by COVID-19. And here we refer mainly to children, persons with disability, the elderly, and of course the poorest and of the poor. And we know that majority of the poorest of the poor reside in townships and rural areas in the main, and we were trying in the main to try and assist those, even though there are a number of urban areas as well that we have made interventions in. The portfolio continues to play a fundamental role, Chairperson, during the pandemic, because we're still in the pandemic, of the provision of a massive package of social protection interventions. Of course, this is part of government's 500 billion rand package, which is a social and economic package announced by the president. In terms of the social measures, we introduced a new grant, which is the special COVID-19 social relief distress grant for the unemployed and distressed as a result of COVID-19. They share 500 billion rand on this particular grant, and it is important to highlight that we leverage on SASA's existing infrastructure to be able to introduce this grant. And even though so the system we had to onboard people who we don't have a database of, we're able to do that in a very short space of time. We also provided top-ups to all existing grants, and this was about 5 billion rand a month, and it amounts to about 20 billion rand altogether that we spent. The food and nutrition support, it was over 530 million rand. Over 550 million rand that we provided, and I'll speak to this a little later. We provided psychosocial support services as well as care services to the most vulnerable, and these services were in high demand as a result of the pandemic and forced us as a portfolio to respond swiftly and with much agility and to extend our services beyond our normal operation. And so we were working overtime. We're working beyond the time that we would normally work. Our staff were working weekends as well, etc. They will share the presentation. They will provide the time frames and plans within which the undertakings will be implemented. In some cases, some of the work has already begun, which covers the 2020-2021 financial year. And in some cases, some commitments will certainly go beyond 2021 financial year. I can move to the next slide. On this slide, we are talking about strengthening of the capabilities of our program. It's important to highlight here that we reviewed the 2020-2021 annual performance plan in line with the budget cuts and in line with the impact of COVID-19 has on our services. And we continue to respond as part of our much needed service. During COVID-19, as I indicated, our services escalated greatly, and of course, with all government departments, we had to amend our APCs and our staff accordingly. We've leveraged on partnerships that we formed with the private sector and civil society to strengthen our capacity to deliver on our services during COVID-19. For example, we partnered with the Solidarity Fund to increase our interventions on food security, as well as renovating database command center, which has moved to a much bigger center because of the expanding need for services to victims of gender-based violence. And we know how this is engulfed the country, and we're trying to make a means to respond accordingly in this regard. So far, as students also concerned, it's important to highlight that at this point, we funded 312 CSOs through the NGA to assist us with gender-based violence and feminized response mechanisms and support victims in this regard. We've also provided training through these, and we leverage on some of the work that they're doing. Lastly, it's important to highlight that we've automated our service. For the special COVID-19 grant, we shifted to an online service. Every application that was made, and we're talking over 10 million applications, almost 10 million applications, were done digitally. And I think that's a significant achievement that we've done.
we are also looking at expanding this to our other platforms as well. And I will speak a little bit later about this. I think we've also partnered with over 10 private sector institutions to provide food, PPE, dignity packs, and training support to families. So families in distress, and our DSD facilities, especially our elderly, our old age homes. I must highlight here that we must thank our partners that have worked with us, and there's a number of them from the Solidarity Fund, to SAB, to MultiChoice, to the Church of Christ of the Latter-day Saints, Procter & Gamble, Cooler Milling, Spa, Old Mutual, FNB, NEF, GovChat, Unilever, the UNDP, Vodacom, the South African Sugar Association, the Magic Oil, and Planet Fitness. These are some of the partners and most of the partners that have worked with us to ensure that we implement our services and improve our capabilities. Here, I must highlight two more important things here. One, that we enlisted the services of support, rather, of CSOs and interfaith leaders who have access to a number of people in society and in communities, in churches and so on, and through their networks to spread the word, to spread the message of behavioral change. And in this regard, Minister Zulu and Minister Mkhize established the Ministerial Advisory Council on Behavioral Change. And I think in addition to that, Minister Zulu has also established a campaign, which is called Asikulume. Basically, the campaign is trying to get people talking about the impact of gender-based violence and femicide. And this campaign has already started in a number of provinces, and the minister is pushing this. And the intention here, Chair, is to move beyond the gatherings that we have. We want to get to a place in the portfolio where these conversations around gender-based violence and femicide, because of the challenge that we are facing in the country, go from house to house, street to street, community to community. That's the intention that we're trying to do with this. Chair, in terms of next steps, Chairperson, we are reviewing our donor coordination mechanisms as well as our partnership model to leverage on our social partners as indicated. It's not just the financial muscle that they have, but we also want to leverage on the skills and the network that they have. And the partnerships with donors will continue in terms of time frame now and next steps will continue in a mutually beneficial manner. So we have also in the process of signing an MOU with the Humanity Trust. We'll be signing that now in November or December. And this organization is going to be assisting us to provide evidence-based research and data on social harm reduction, treatment, and rehabilitation services related to substance abuse and use. And we know how substance abuse has also engulfed our country, particularly young people across the republic. And this is going to try and assist and improve our capabilities and our services. That's it. And then we're also working on social welfare and developmental reforms and greater to improve our efficiencies and effectiveness on funding for NGOs as well. We're also improving our food and nutrition and security programs and poverty alleviation and community development. Chair, the crux of this slide really talks to the fact that as government, we cannot do it alone. It's necessary that we partner with other social partners to be able to realize the mandate of the organization. And this is in the spirit of doing more together. And so that's the context of that slide. If I can move to the next slide quickly. Here we are talking, just to continue on this, it's important to highlight that we're looking at a different breed of cadres in the organization to improve our capabilities. This is in line with the first priority of government of creating a capable, ethical, and developmental state. And so what we have done and what we're beginning to do, Chair, is to employ data analysts, ICT specialists, and economists to assist us with modeling and business process re-engineering to enhance our efficiencies and address historical challenges. So we still have challenges, Chair, and honorable members, where social workers in the main are still using manual systems. And this resulted in a number of challenges, including some litigation in some areas. And so what we're saying is we need to not only automate our systems, but re-engineer the way in which social development, and this is again reimagining social development, and we're working on that accordingly. And then, Chair, in terms of our other interventions and so far as human capacity or human resource capabilities is concerned, what we did is during COVID-19, we actually employed over 1,800 contract social workers to strengthen our COVID-19 response measures. Because of the need that was created for social workers, both in terms of the affected and infected, we had to step up our game by providing additional social workers, and we've done that. Originally, this was a period for 3 months. We've since extended this to the end of the financial year. I will speak to what we're doing in that regard as well. We've also included 4 social workers training in trauma counseling, and so that when they deal with the very difficult cases at times, and it's important that we also assist them with a number of training programs. So we've trained them in advanced trauma counseling. Chair, I must also highlight that we've onboarded over 2,000 volunteers, and these are largely young people, to assist ESD related community development, community services, for communities based in the district. We use the district development model, as we said, in certain districts, this is in all districts, these are the amount of people that we have that are unemployed, that we can bring them on as volunteers. We use this youth cater to try and assist in some of our services. In some cases, they were assisting with manning the line that would sometimes be very long at the starter offices, and in a number of cases, actually, and see what later, those applicants that have applied for the grant, we have submitted wrong details. We have actually gone the extra mile and made sure that we try and literally find them through our volunteers so that we're able to assist them with this particular program. And then, of course, we are working on keeping them beyond the COVID-19 pandemic, and they are currently also going to be working with us in the school of the campaign and a number of other of our programs. Chair, we will continue strengthening our capabilities. This process is ongoing, and some recruitment processes are already underway. I think it's also important to highlight that the reason why we employ social workers is because we have a very high number of unemployed social workers in the country. And as a response, we're trying to assist. What we've done is we've encouraged provinces to try and absorb social workers on a permanent basis so that when it comes to the end of March, there is a way to continue this. And some provinces are amenable to this. Some are already beginning to look at readjusting their budgets so that they be able to employ social workers. But at this point, I think it's important that I highlight, Chairperson, that there is a 2018 cabinet decision, actually, that actually says that all government departments should be part and parcel of employing and absorbing social workers. And some government departments have done so, some have not, and we're working on a strategy to see how best we can address this challenge. We must also indicate, Chair, that it's important that I use this platform to also highlight that during COVID-19, we actually lost a lot of social workers and a lot of workers in the organization and portfolio. These are social workers and people who put their lives on the line and tied to the line of duty. And I think it's important that we acknowledge them for the work that they are doing. Social workers have really commend this this group of comrades and this group of frontline workers who are doing a fantastic job by putting their lives on the line and to save others. And some, of course, have passed on, and they're so rest in peace in that regard. If I can go to the next slide very quickly. CEO, let me allow you to do the slide.
My time.
Honorable Chair and members, it's a privilege to be here to present the part of work that has been done by SASA. As indicated, I came with a team, which is the team of the SASA executives that are here for us to report. Okay, I have to highlight that at the time, particularly when we started rolling out the COVID-19 program, we did not have a system out of and also we had to build a system from scratch for us to be able to deliver this service to new clients. Currently, as we speak, over and above the 11.3 million clients that we have, which is our normal clients, we now have a database of an additional 9.3 million clients, 9.3 million clients who are new clients. So this is important to highlight. It is also important to highlight that because, again, we don't have one place as government where the database of all of our clients sits. It created quite a number of challenges that actually go and validate the clients to see as to whether they actually qualify from the other databases. And these include the SARS, the EIF, and the NISPAS database. And we had to also validate the clients that were already receiving other grants from other parts of government. So between May and October, the number of valid applications that we received were 9.3 million. That is after having received others that have been duplicated and actually came up to 17 million clients. 9.3 million were approved, came through the system and had to be validated on the different platforms. And 6 million applications were approved, and we have over the months been paying all the different kinds of clients and making sure that we can deliver to these clients, because we know that these are extremely needy people that actually don't have any other support from government. So the challenge, but we believe that we won the war in terms of making sure that all the clients can get to the money. We ended up having to resort to the post office because we found that many of the clients actually did not have bank accounts, which therefore meant that we had to find a quick solution for us to get money to them. With the extension of the 3 months that has come through with the announcement of the president, the focus that we are now having is to make sure that we deal with the appeals of those people that we find because they were found in the other different systems, and some that actually did not have jobs. So we're dealing with the appeals processes, and we need to make sure that we actually automate that process because doing it manually not be able get to the end of get to all the clients that we actually need. As indicated in the presentation by the minister, we've continued with payments and have, in actual fact, successfully paid from May, we paid 4.4 million clients, and for June, 5 million clients, in July, 5.5 million clients, in August, we paid again also 5.9 million, and in October, 5.9 million. It's important to highlight that on the other months, particularly for September and October and for June and July, because we noted that there were a number of clients we had not paid, we actually did a number of double payments for those clients that we had not paid before. The bulk of the withdrawals, about 4 million people, are ending up having to withdraw their money from the post office because we had a challenge with the clients that had opted to be paid using the e-cash or the cash vouchers, because we found that many of the clients were affected. They actually had opted for that solution. They actually did not have the cell phone numbers in their own name, which created a challenge. So therefore, ended up having to take those 500 beneficiaries and also pay them through the post office. The other challenge, Chair, that I need to highlight is that although we've paid many of these people of our clients, including those that we've paid through cell phone banking, sadly some of the clients have actually not claimed their money, which actually makes it quite a bit of a concern as to whether is it because they did not get the message which we sent out to them to say they need to go and redeem the cash that we paid, or whether there's other issues whereby you may find that the client has applied actually using someone else's phone. Because to redeem the money, it can only be redeemed by the individual that has applied for it. Indeed, other outstanding payments, which is the part that worries us, because this is 68,000 people that actually have not received their money. And there's a number of reasons as to why this is happening. Some of it, again, is because we cannot even upload the client to go and redeem their money from the post office. Because, again, if they have an account at the post office, it becomes difficult for the post office to actually open yet another account for them. But what we've done is we've engaged the regions together with the volunteers to actually go and find the client so that we can make sure that these clients need what belongs to. The number of those clients, is because of the challenge that I've highlighted above. What's been interesting is that we've also found another group of people, one by the system, but also those that have fraudulent clients. Because those are the clients that are satisfied and what it is that we need to do. Identify other people that should not be now
sorry to disturb you. There are those people who is heavy utikeledi inokumthethwa. They are not muted. Linton, you are not muted and you are disturbing the meeting.
I'm speaking on Linton's stage.
Oh, all right. Tikeledi.
Okay, I'm muted.
Please. Inokumthethwa, please mute. Oh, you can continue, ma'am.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to highlight that it was very helpful to have the NDA volunteers not only to provide support in terms of those clients that have not redeemed their money, but also in terms of helping, including social workers, helping those clients that don't have access to technology to make sure that they can also have access the money that they are rightfully entitled to. Can we please go to the next slide?
You are left with 3 minutes.
Okay, I'm almost done, Chair. I had highlighted the work that was done also by the region and highlight that we will continue to look for each and every client that has not been paid through this process to make sure that we deliver in terms of the mandate that we have. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Chair, we've got two more slides. The one regarding food, it's important to highlight that we've shifted our model from providing plates of food to those who are...
Sorry, can I have your indulgence, please? You are left with only 3 minutes with the slide that you are referring to.
Right. I will do 1 minute. Chair, I'll do a quick 2 minutes and then the CEO of PTA will come on this slide. Very quickly, Chair, we've shifted our model from providing plates of food to providing food parcels, which is of course within the context of COVID-19 regulations, but it also enables recipients to have more food as opposed to just having a plate of food. I must also highlight that we worked with our partners very closely in this regard, and what we did was just over 1.3 million food parcels countrywide, which should have 550 million rands to 400 people. And these interventions actually reduced an increase in food insecurity and malnutrition as served millions of households, including children that would only get food from the school feeding scheme at home in their households, they would get the food as well. I think it's also important, Chair, that one of the reasons why we thought it's important that we have a hybrid model between our food vouchers and so that the food vouchers, because the food parcels are very labor intensive, they're expensive, and don't allow a sense of dignity at times. The food vouchers are important in that they allow people to be able to transact and buy electricity, gas, food, but also so that they are able to transact within their local community and don't have to travel into town, etc. This also assists in terms of local economic development. We are working on this change. We've received an additional 500 billion rand in terms of allocation for food from the National Treasury after the bid that we made. We are working on the system, and we think that in the next financial year, we'll be ready with that. Lastly, Chair, I'd like the CEO of NDA to come in. CEO?
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members and colleagues. Can I have the slide for NDA, please? We continue to have our volunteers, Chairperson, on the ground. Can I have next slide, DG, please? We continue to have our volunteers on the ground. So far, we are remaining with 1.2 million on the procurement that needs to happen. What we have done in terms of the stipends, we have made sure that the stipends continue to be paid to these volunteers. And we have made sure that the PPEs all the time. They are on their PPEs so that we protect them from contracting the virus. Our volunteers continue to work with households in terms of advocacy programs and civil society organizations. As we sit here now, 5.7 million was spent on COVID-19 related PPEs. This was to ensure that all those emerging cooperatives that we have capacitated in the past and invested so much programs on making sure that they can participate in economic opportunities. We requested an approval from the National Treasury for them to be prioritized as well during the COVID-19 procurement period. So we will continue again to link them to various departments for other areas of procurement just beyond the PPEs. And also, I can confirm that with the SASA, we continue to work with SAPO, post office, in queue marshalling and queue management. We continue to give information on COVID-19, working together with Department of Health as well. We are continuing with our volunteers. And the remaining term was 6 months from the first phase, and the second phase, we are remaining with the 5 months already. But the stipends we continue to pay. Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. In terms of the procurement from cooperatives and SMMEs, as a portfolio, we've led by example by ourselves, from cooperatives and SMMEs. We'll continue to procure from these designated groups, particularly in line with the Federation Directive, that 40% of procurement must go towards government-led enterprises. But we are working, so we've actually issued a directive to provinces and these provinces that they must procure from small businesses and SMMEs, particularly those funded and supported by government. The problem is that we often support startups in their establishment, but we seldom give them market access opportunities. And through this, we are actually providing them with market access opportunities. Thank you very much, Chairman, for that. Leave that at the end of our presentation.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, that's the presentation from the department. Now it's our time to really interact with the information that we've received. Can I have your hands up? So far, nothing. Is it that clear?
There is, sir.
Oh, okay. Honourable Dodogo.
Yes, thank you very much.
Nam Chair, just one.
All right.
Yes, thank you very much. Let me start by thanking the Minister and her team for the update and really reinforce the fact that we always appreciate if the department respond in the manner that social development has done by respecting this committee and by ensuring that whatever it does as a department, it implements its commitments. This is very much commendable. I want to say, Chair, and reinforce this point that social development is very, very much important in the lives of our people. It is the core phase of government efforts to alleviate poverty. When we talking about the alleviation of poverty, social development plays a very pivotal central role in realizing that objective, because it deals with the poorest of the poor in terms of supporting them, whether with social grants, with food parcels, and so on, and we appreciate that. What I will not accept, Chair, is the fact that when social development is doing this wonderful work, there are people who have some ulterior motives, nefarious agendas, in terms of looting the state, and I would greatly appreciate if the department can, at all material times, open its eyes in terms of looking for those who take an advantage of that situation. Now, I want the department to respond to this point that I'm, the question that I'm posing. The fact that during the PPEs or the COVID-19 as a whole, there's been a major outcry on the issue of the food parcels, on how food parcels are distributed. I want to check with the department, why are they giving this work to councillors, to politicians who in our communities take a responsibility to distribute these food parcels? From where I come from, I've had a lot of allegations in the Northwest. I've had a lot of allegations about the distribution of food parcels, but they do not oftentimes reach the intended beneficiaries, but friends, families, fiancés alike are the beneficiaries of the food parcels. And for me, this is criminal. At a time that we need to make a massive intervention occasioned by COVID-19, we have these sorts of allegations. And why are they not devising other mechanisms to ensure that food parcels are distributed and they are targeted to the real people who need them? I do not say exclude councillors or municipalities altogether, but my view is that we need to tighten that system in which we ensure that the food parcels are going to the rightful owners. That's that with the food parcels. The other issue relates to the grant, the social grants, especially the 350 grants which were given to the unemployed and the poor. I think this was a very, very good intervention on the part of government. It's very, very good. It's appreciated. And every day when people receive these grants, I see thousands of people forming queues, especially in the post office, spending the whole day. I won't do it. A lot of people won't do it. But that signifies how disparate are our poor people. Forming long queues for the whole day waiting for 350 rands. What I don't understand is why the extended hours of the post office are not made, because sometimes they even close even when the queue is forming and people have to go back, and others would have came to town using their last money, or others walk long distances to reach the post office or offices. Why don't we have, you know, extended hours and ensure that we cover the ground as much as possible in this regard? But other than that, I'm proud of this department. It has not been a mess in big controversies around COVID-19, and I say keep it up, bravo, this is good, this is what government needs to do to ensure that at all material times we perform our services in a way that inspires confidence, in a way that will really, really, in true sense of the word, benefit our people. In that sense, thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dodo. Who can I then take, Honorable Silepu?
Hey, you're good. Good morning, Chair and members. Thank you for the presentation. Isaac Mbulilo Silepu from the Western Cape. Chair, just two questions. The others were covered by Honorable Dodo. And then in terms of the issue of the social workers that are currently on contract and the directive that the department has sent to provinces, asking them to readjust their provincial budget, of making sure that they appoint these social workers that are on contract on permanent basis. What impact does it have on what has been said by the Minister of Finance, Tito Mboweni, in terms of cutting the state budget in terms of employees. Because if we say to provinces they must appoint people on permanent basis, and then the minister says we need to cut because the state is employing a lot of people, they just need to clarify to me, you know, because there's two contradicting statements. On the other side, you're saying provinces put more, and on the other side, National is saying let's try to minimize the budget because we are actually appointing a lot. And Chair, I always, you know, welcome when we support SMMEs that really want to go and try to do business so that they can appoint people. But my question that I would like the department to just maybe give more info is these SMMEs that they are procuring from, these PPE, have they been in existence or were they just established because of the COVID-19? You know, because when we see that we are going to get opportunities and then we start and we establish SMMEs and then we want to procure. And then if it's like that, so how are they going to, what plans has the department looked at on making sure that these SMMEs or these designated groups that they are currently procuring from, that does not die after COVID-19, but they become, you know, fully, you know, established and they continue with their lifespan? Because it's good and well that we talk about SMMEs, but within a period of 2 to 3 years, then we find that out of the 10 that we procured from as DSD, we only have one left. So I would like the department to just, you know, convince me, what role are they going to play making sure that these designated groups that they are procuring from, that they don't die, you know, when COVID-19 dies. Thank you very much. That will be all for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Representative Mela.
No, thanks, Chair. I'm partly covered by the two colleagues. And then, one of the things that I'm actually a bit concerned about is the, especially now during COVID-19, what was happening with the issue of the food parcels. I understand that the councillors were utilized in municipalities and all those kinds of things. And what other mechanisms are there? We see what went wrong, what happened with regard to the way they were distributed or the format that they were using. What criteria is there to correct what has happened during COVID-19? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Sheikh.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And let me join colleagues to thank the department for the the way they presented the information. Chair, I know they took long, but I think the information that was being presented was very important, and we appreciate the presentation. Captain, I'm partly covered by other colleagues, but I'll just raise my two questions. The one is a question and comment. It's with regard to the 1,809 contract social workers. Chair, I just want to know, in terms of there have been social workers that have been trained by, I think, funds were provided by national departments. Whether these 1,809 contract social workers whether those social workers who have been trained using government funding are part of these contract social workers. But Chair, I think also in terms of the provinces that are being encouraged to appoint the social workers, if the department can also provide us with more information and break it down in terms of the provinces, given that we're the National Council of Provinces, so that we, as we also do our oversight work in provinces, we can also look into some of these matters. Chair, my second issue was partly covered by Honourable Zidovu with regard to the special COVID-19 SRC grant. Indeed, Chair, even as we do our oversight work, we see queues of people waiting outside the post office to receive the grant. Given the COVID-19 situation and the impact it's had, not only on the South African economy, but the global economy, Chair obviously is going to remain with us for some time. But research has also shown that the grant assists in ensuring that people don't fall into the poverty trap. So I just want to know, in terms of this special grant, the thesis you ran, what is the plan of the department going forward? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Sheikh. I assume that Galaxy Tab is Honourable Bartlett. Thanks, and sorry for the inconvenience. Eh?
Okay.
Thanks, and sorry, technology. Now, Chair, I really also want to appreciate the fact that the Department of Minister gave us really a very brief and informative presentation. And some of the colleagues already covered the previous things, but I just want to find out, what are they going to do about the, I see there's still 3 million people left that was declined. I understand that they're saying that some of, because of UIF and all the things, but how are they going to suffer and where are they going to be done with that? And I also see that they say 2020 and 2021. And then the other thing about the social workers, I think it's really necessary for the Department of Social Development to help these social workers, especially the ones who are handling the food parcels, because they are at risk. And I also know they said there's not really money, but were the solidarity funds, will they be able to help them before time, or will they only be able to help them during 2021? Thanks, Steph.
Thank you very much for the question. I do not see any other hand after this that I have already noted. I also have my few questions. First, I would like to know from the department, they are saying they have a program of dealing with gender-based violence. How I wish they could break it down and tell us exactly what is it that they are doing, so that as people who are doing oversight, who are able to see in our provinces where they are doing work. And the other one is the use of technology. I heard the minister say that it has helped a lot. They discovered that a lot of people are able to use technology, even those that are in rural areas. What I would like to know from the department, apart from the breakthrough that they have identified, what are the challenges that they have picked up in this system of technology? Because we know for a fact there are people who are staying in deep rural areas where it is difficult to access even e-network. So how are they dealing with those areas? Good example is Alfred Nzo. I'll repeat that. Because Alfred Nzo, we tried to communicate with them when we were doing this program of review of the Women's Charter. We were unable to get the mayor of the area because of network. So I'm just thinking aloud, how are they surviving in terms of this service that they should get through technology? And the other one is on the issue of disability. I heard the minister saying they are doing something about it, but I'm not quite clear what is it exactly what they are doing and what is the time frame for them to finish the exercise that they are embarking on to deal with challenges that are faced with people that are living with disabilities. And the other one is, how is the department prioritizing its program to fulfill its obligation in terms of COVID-19 relief grants, considering that you have recently received 40.6 billion? So I just want to know, out of that amount, how did you prioritize, whether in terms of the provinces or in terms of certain programs within the department? And again, how many applications from the SRG grant were rejected? We just need numbers. I'm asking this question because we are having problems where we are deployed. People are getting rejected on the basis that they have claimed UIF, yet a person never worked, never had any kind of UIF funds. So I just want to know, how many are they? What are you doing with them? If finally you ended up correcting the situation, are those people going to get the money since the start of the grant? Is that a question that comes out of mind? And the other one, what is the department doing to combat gender-based violence, which I have asked earlier on, specifics and femicide, specifics on that one? Can I stop there and allow you to respond? I still have a few questions.
Thank you very much.
Is the Deputy Minister in? Is the Deputy Minister in?
Chair, I don't yet see the Deputy Minister. We'll ask the Ministry to assist with that, to advise. Abraham, if you can advise, please.
We have serious time constraints.
Chair, I could, in the meantime, if we can respond whilst the Ministry assists us in that regard. Is that okay?
Okay. But
thank you, Chair.
I would like to ask the Deputy Minister, because we don't make the officials to account to us.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Abraham, please work on that. I will ask Kumbula to respond to the social workers issue. Brenda on the 350 grant to keep it as short as possible. Then the NDA in terms of the SMEs, the retention and the CEO starter, and then I will close at the end. Thank you very much. Kumbula? Mr. Naba?
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. Thank you, DG. The question that was asked by Honorable Sheikh about the 1,809 social workers. Yes, it's true. The 1,809 social workers include those who were actually funded by the state. So, but it also includes those who funded themselves. So it's a combination. The two.
You are breaking. We can't hear you properly.
I don't have an answer, Honorable Doto Vosileko, about the Minister of Finance's contradiction. Because once we are persuading the department,
you are breaking. We can't hear you.
To the department and the province, that is an issue. But we can't hear me.
Can you start from scratch? We can't hear you.
All right. Let me start with the question that was raised by Honorable Sileko. We have asked provinces to actually continue with the employment of social workers. What we have observed is that there is allocation in the provinces that is currently not spent. And in that regard, we have insisted that those provinces should make sure that they spend their allocation and that they should employ more social workers. Indeed, National Treasury has been very strict here in the sense that National Treasury has raised the issue of fiscal constraints, which limits our capacity and our ability to employ more social workers. But we continue to engage with them, and it's a continuous process. But notwithstanding this, quite a number of social workers have been employed in spite of this challenge. In relation to the 1,809 social workers, yes, they are a combination of two groups. The first group is the group that is self, that trained on its own, And the second group is the group that received funding from the state. So it's a combination of the two. I think those were the two questions that were asked in relation to social workers.
Okay. Can Brenda please respond quickly to the grant issue, then the NDA CEO.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, honourable members, Minister in Attendance, and colleagues. I will deal only with two questions. One relating to what's going to happen post the SRG grant that is ending at the end of January of this year. In that respect, I think it's good to start by saying the value of the COVID pandemic has been, although there's been a lot of negative impact, one of the good things that have come out of it is to enable us to be able to gather information and access the details of the people who have been excluded from the social grant framework, the 19 to 59 age group, which is the cohort of people that are accessing the grant now. We have been for many years trying to find ways of linking grant beneficiary households to economic opportunities, and part of the biggest challenge has been not knowing where to find them and who they are. So the value of the SASA database is that it has this category of personnel. And what the department is now doing together with SASA is we have now started to extract that information and break it down into district information so that we will be able to now work more carefully with specific people to assist them to be able to access other economic opportunities. Many of these opportunities will arrive now as a result of what the president announced in terms of the reconstruction and recovery plan, and what we're hoping to be working with not just DNC but other departments also, is to provide this database and then assist those people to be able to get into those economic opportunities. We recognize that it will not be able to cover everybody, but we think that will make quite a big difference by linking a lot of them to economic opportunities, on the understanding that it's not possible to continue the grant simply because of the fiscal space that the government is in. So we think that is a very important intervention that we'll be able to do. And we expect to have greater success now because we know who the people are, and we are also able from the data database to break them down and link them directly to opportunities in their own location. And then with regards to the other question that I can speak to is the one about how we prioritize the 41 billion. The way it was prioritized is that it was given to different types of groups. Firstly, we increased the existing grant beneficiaries amount by 250. Each of the people were given an extra 250 rand per month for the 6 months from May up until the end of October. So their existing grants will increase. That was one part. The second part is we did some innovation by introducing a specific 500 rand per month allocation for all caregivers of child support grant beneficiaries. There was in recognition of the fact that a lot of them, the children were now not accessing the food that was being provided at school. So it was important to augment the incomes of those households with children by giving the 500 rand directly to the caregivers. In addition to that, we introduced the caregiver grant. Sorry, the SRG grant, which went to all the people who are outside of the grant framework, the people aged between 19 and 59 who are unemployed. So that's how the money was prioritized in terms of the allocation for the relief. Thank you.
Thank you. CEO NDA on SMMEs.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. On our database as National Development Agency, we've been working.
What is face? All these people that are speaking, we do not see their faces at all. Can we help us with showing your faces?
Chair, my video is on.
Yeah, it's on now.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. As National Development Agency, we keep the database of the civil society organization that is inclusive of CSOs, NPOs, and NGOs, and some of the SMMEs. We've been working with them for some time out of the model that we administer on capacity building. Then we grant fund them for startups, the imaging. As they develop and become graduate to do the work, perfect work, we then link them to economic opportunities. In the main, we've been linking them to SASSA on SRD, that is school uniform production, those who are suing school uniform, and we've been linking them, those who are in food production, producing veg for those food parcels in terms of SASSA and both social development. Chairperson will remember that previously it's been pronounced that government departments must apportion 30% of their budget to these emerging and these opportunities to these civil society organizations and SMEs. During the COVID-19 pandemic, there was a lull, and there were others affected by the non-production of school uniform or food production. So in the main, we prioritize them to benefit from these opportunities. They are not new. And post this pandemic, there's always be a linkages in opportunities, even in private sector. Those who are producing toilet paper, detergent, we continue to link them. And the database from our SMMEs, we interface it with that of the Department of Small Business. So as they graduate from being emerging cooperatives to becoming independent developed SMMEs, we link them to economics department so that they get these opportunities. However, we track them so that when they fall short of the skills in terms of the next level of their development, we are able to take them back to our model of development. Like the example of the cloth mask, where they were given such opportunity, we discovered that some had really lost touch with the quality, and we have taken them back to capacity building programs of the National Development Agency. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Maurice, the CEO of SASSA.
Thank you, Chair. I think the other questions Brenda has responded to. On the issue of the clients that was declined, the 3 million clients that were declined because they were getting, they were seeking in other databases, unfortunately, we declined them on the base that they actually already were receiving other grants. That's the reason. We continue to get new database from the other institutions, including NSFAS and UIF, and on a monthly basis, we actually validate the clients on the date on the new database that we have. And in instances where we find that there's a change, we then make sure that those clients actually qualify. A number of clients have actually already appealed on the basis of the fact that even though they were on the database, they actually are unemployed. And we're currently dealing with all the appeals, as we indicated earlier on. We are now dealing with about 60,000 appeals, and many of whom we've now actually cleaned up for us to put on the automated system. And once a client has appealed and we find that they qualify, if they have applied in May, we actually pay them from the month that they actually applied if the situation has changed in relation to those clients. The other key issue that I'll respond to is the disability grant. We've had a huge influx because of the number of people that now need the support. We've dealt with many of the clients that actually existed by extending the disability grant until end of December. And in December, that's when we'll have a huge influx. And the teams, both in the regions and together with grants and head office, are working on a key plan so that we can make sure that we can actually stagger the clients so that they don't all come at the same time to be assessed. And we're also getting more and more doctors to provide support because the health system currently cannot help us in that regard. We're doing all we can to make sure that we can provide support to those customers. We know it's a challenge because the backlog is huge, but the teams are out there making sure that they need to do the best they can to support those clients. So it's continuous work, Chair, but we are going to do all we can to make sure that we provide support. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Just to respond to two issues that were not responded to. The first one is the issue around food parcels distribution. I want to confirm, Chair, indeed, that the Department of Social Development, nor SASSA, do not, as a matter of principle, provide any food parcels to councillors or to groups. We have a well-equipped running machinery through which we provide food parcels to those who are in need of food, and we keep through our CNDCs, we have about 256 community nutrition and development centers across the country. Through those centers, we keep databases, and these are centers that are run with our provinces. And I can assure you that we do not give food parcels to anybody. It's important, though, to highlight that during the lockdown, there were many players providing food to a number of people. In fact, what is happening in the country is that we were indirectly, without knowing it, building a social compact where everybody was coming on board to provide food to those who are vulnerable. And that's a significant thing. I must say, though, Honorable Todorovo, that indeed there are those negative people that you were speaking about. We experienced it in some cases as it relates to this work. There was elements of coordination that were problematic. And all the time, people thought that we were the ones. We can confirm that we have dealt with whatever cases that have come our way through the provinces. And we do not, as a matter of principle, brand our food in any political party related branding, and we do not give counselors. We encourage recipients to apply as individuals for the food, and we do not give to groups. In terms of coordination, we did receive some challenges where in some cases some people were provided with food that is expired, etc., etc. As I indicated, a number of people were providing food parcels, and we tried to amend this, we tried to assist by providing an element of coordination. But of course, in some cases, we were not able to do so, but we did as much as we could in that regard. I can assure you, Chair, that we can account for all the donations we received from various players, our private sector in the main, who have assisted us in terms of food distribution. We can account for that. We can account for all food that we distributed as a DSD and as SASA, because our systems are very sound in that regard. The second issue I want to respond to, Chair, is the issue of the gender-based violence and the specific programs that we are working on. Let me say, Chair, firstly, that there is a center that we are very proud of, which is the Gender-Based Command Center. This center, we have moved it from a smaller center to a much bigger center. Chair, it's a command center in the true sense of being a command center. You get real-time information in terms of what's happening in various districts. You can tell where the number of people are calling in from. It has high-end technology and geolocation systems. So if you are an individual and you are a victim of gender-based violence, we encourage you to call. You can use toll-free numbers. You can use WhatsApp. You can use LinkedIn. You can use SMSs and other measures. So it's a very, very high-tech center that we'll be launching in the next few days during the 16 days of activism against women and no violence against women and children. And actually, we'd like to invite members of this committee, if they get a chance in December, actually visit the center. I promise you, you will be really impressed at the kind of technology that we've introduced into this center. We must thank Vodacom, and we must thank the Solidarity Fund and UNICEF for working with us in ensuring that we have this center. Beyond that, Chair, you'd note that the President has issued and indicated that gender-based violence and femicide is actually the second pandemic after COVID-19. Now, as a response to this, Chairperson, the President has also indicated that he would like to have Kuseleka centers in all 9 provinces. Currently, we only have Kuseleka centers in 3 provinces. In all 9 provinces, we have 3 currently that are operational. A Kuseleka center, Chair, is a center where all services of government are centralized in that center. So if a victim needs to get assistance, they do not need to go to the police station and then go to court and then go to other places. They get all the support in one center. It's a one-stop center. We're in the process of working with the partners to build an additional 6 in the other provinces that don't have currently. So beyond the Kuseleka centers, we also have shelters. We fund over 117 shelters across the country. We would like to do more. If we had more money, we'd be able to extend our support to these shelters. But through the National Strategic Plan of Action on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide, Chairperson, we are responsible for Pillar 4 of that particular plan. It's a national plan which speaks to prevention, it speaks to care, it speaks to healing, it speaks to trauma counseling, it speaks to sheltering, and of course, reintegration services. So we're doing all of this work. There's a whole lot more that I could speak about, Chair, but for time, I won't get into the details, but we can certainly share these with you. I spoke about the Askulume program that the Minister has recently launched. And there are a number of others that we're working with other provinces, including other role players, stakeholders, particularly in civil society, to try and extend this message of gender-based violence. So, Chair, let me leave it at that. Maybe on the market access one, I can also add, Chair, sorry, on the SMMEs one. You know, the biggest challenge that we have is that we support so many startups, SMMEs and cooperatives. The last I checked, we have a failure rate of over 85%, between 80 and 85% of SMMEs in the country. Now, if you have a failure rate of between 80 and 85%, it means that in 1 year, you have all these SMMEs and cooperatives who will eventually die. The key to this, over and above the funding and other related matters, the key to this is to provide market access opportunities. And as governments, we should lead the call in that regard. So we encourage, we're going to try and work with the Department of Small Business Development, but we encourage all three spheres of government to ensure that they get the databases of these SMEs that are supported by government in their startup phases so that they can provide market access opportunities for them so that they don't die. So this is a very fundamental point, Chair, and I want to say that, as I indicated in the beginning of the presentation, that we do provide, even as the DSD portfolio, we actually support cooperatives, SMMEs that are in local municipalities. In fact, through our CNDC centers, the foods and the vegetables that come into some of the centers actually come from cooperatives in those particular centers. I hope I've convinced Honorable Sileka in this regard. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Those were the questions, Order Sileko. Those were the responses from the questions that we've asked, but there's only one that I think I really need to ask the DG. Is it possible, DG, to get a breakdown, disaggregated data of all those that have managed to get the grant per province, so that when we go back during recess, we are able to say this is the list approved by the department, not here and now, but it's an information that you would like to have.
Yes, I can confirm that we can share that with you. In fact, we'll go even further. We'll break it down into how many males and females we've actually provided the grant to in every single province. I would be able to do that for you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Also share information to us. In terms of request, question rather, in terms of the breakdown of the 1,809, we can share that information in terms of which provinces we've employed social workers. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. Okay. So that takes care of all our questions, and I know that the Minister didn't pitch up at all. Can we then safely say we are done with the Department of Social Development? Let's thank the DG and the staff, and also thanks the Minister Zulu for joining us during his busy schedule of the cabinet sitting. We very much appreciate that, because this is the work that we really need to do as this committee to make sure that the ministers, they account for their undertakings, and us as parliamentarians who are able to follow your responses to our respective provinces and do oversight. Thank you very much. You are then excused.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the committee.
Thank you. Can we then go to our next item without wasting time? Consideration of the petition and adoption of it. If you remember, we did have a petition from Lasswell. Yes, if I'm pronouncing correct. So we have a report that we have sent to all of you, honorable members. I'm sure you have taken time to look at it. If there are corrections that in answer if later. If you have corrections to make to the report, please feel free to do so. I am looking at your hands. Any corrections to the report? It is flighted and we have received it for quite a while. Can I get comments or else the adoption of the report? If there are no corrections and comments to the report.
I'll move for the adoption of the report, Chair.
Okay, there's also a hand of Honorable George Makalekas.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. If the recommendations are the same as the ones that we received via email, then I want to second Honorable Bartlett that we adopt the report. And I also want to commend the support staff as well for their contribution in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mthethwa, your hand is up. Honorable Mthethwa.
No, Chair, I wanted to second at that time, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. So that takes care of our report. Now, the e-consideration and adoption of the outstanding minutes that you also have with you. Can we look at those minutes? Can you flight them so that as well we know who was present, who was absent in the meeting? Those are the minutes. Can I get someone to make corrections or else to adopt the minutes? Is your hand up, Honorable Sheikh?
Yes, Chairperson. I move for the adoption of the minutes, Chair.
Oh, thank you. Honorable Enoch Mthethwa, are you seconding? I see your hand is up.
Chairperson, it's me, Chair.
Yes, Honorable Dodogu.
Yes, I rise to second the adoption of the minutes.
I seconded, Chair.
Okay, you both second. Thank you very much, Honorable.
Chairperson.
Yes.
Honorable Ngosi.
Yes, Honorable Ngosi.
Yeah, Chair, thank you very much, man. Before they adopt the minutes as true reflection, I want to say I was present in the I was present in that meeting, but I see that there's an apology in my name. I don't know how did it happen. Thank you.
Okay. Can Mr. Mkhize look at that and correct it, please? Thank you very much. The minutes are adopted, and with that correction of Honorable Ngosi. And that takes us to the last item of the agenda, which is closure. Thank you very much for your participation, Honorable Members. Please don't forget, we've got another meeting.
Thank you, Chair.
And at 12. Yes, Honorable Bartlett, do you want to say something?
No, I just say thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Okay.